telephone directly from Mexico City, Helen Bernstein, who is going to be in the Hudson Valley, New Paltz in particular, talking about Cuba.
Yeah, Helen Bernstein is the acting co-director of IFCO, Pastor for Peace. And apparently this talk is going to be about proposed economic changes, effects of the blockade on healthcare, and the U.S. students studying in the Latin American School of Medicine in Cuba. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning. It's good to be with you today.
Thank you very much.
Why this talk now? Why are you going to talk about Cuba? What is your interest with this country?
Well, we've had interest in Cuba for a long time from our organization. We have been very concerned about the United States policy of imposing a blockade against Cuba for reasons that we think are immoral and petty and mean-spirited. At the same time, we've been very interested in Cuba because we see many projects developed there that we think the United States could learn a lot from. And we have seen so much disinformation in the public media about the realities of Cuba. We always say that the travel blockade that is imposed against Cuba also creates an information blockade. So we organize a project every summer that's called the Pastors for Peace Friendshipment Caravan to Cuba. And we travel to Cuba each summer bringing humanitarian aid and people from the United States and from other countries too who want to see the realities of Cuba. And in that way, we break the travel blockade and the information blockade.
For many people don't know that people from the United States cannot travel freely to Cuba. How do you guys bring a group to Cuba every year?
Well, we have found a way to challenge those restrictions. As you said, it's correct. There are many people in the United States who don't even know there is a blockade against Cuba. And part of the reason we organized this big project is that we make people aware in many different cities around the United States. We do talks like the one we're going to do with CLASP on Sunday.
This will be
130 different cities, and in each of those cities we do an informational meeting about the realities of the blockade, about current events in Cuba. We try to break that information blockade, and when people hear the situation, they 99% of them agree with us that it's time to change the U.S. policy.
Are there being any changes since President Obama took office?
There have been changes in the policy, but they have been, from our perspective, they've been small and slow. There have been changes only in who might be allowed to travel to Cuba. And I know that new regulations have just been published that allow people who are academics doing projects, people who are students, people in certain religious organizations to be able to travel more freely. What our late director, who passed away last September, Reverend Lucius Walker, what he always said is that those, when you loosen those restrictions, when you say certain categories of people can go, and the government has to give licenses to those people, has to give permission, that in a way is just a way of making the blockade look softer, even when it stays really hard, because still most people in the United States don't have permission to travel.
It seems,
and the reality is that many more of us can't go, and that only certain categories can. So we had been hoping in Obama's campaign, he talked about having direct talks with the Cuban government. We imagined that he would not be in favor of the very harsh economic blockade that is imposed against Cuba, which has cost Cuba more than $100 billion and also is hurting U.S. businesses, because Cuba could be a market for a lot of U.S. products that we're not allowed to sell there. And also, Cuba has products that we're not allowed to receive in the United States. But Obama's been very slow on those other steps. We understand he's been working on a lot of other issues, but because Cuba is an issue that we know well, and because we think it would be relatively easy for him to make those changes, we've been disappointed that he hasn't. We've also been concerned that that there are five Cuban prisoners in the United States who are in Supermax prison for more than 13 years just because they were trying to stop some of the terrorist attacks that had taken place against Cuba based in Miami. And there's been a lot of misunderstanding and disinformation about their cases, but they remain in prison, and we're hoping that President Obama will pardon them and send them home.
I understand that obviously you guys cannot go directly from Miami to Cuba, and that you have to go through Mexico, I believe. Is the Mexican government allowing this to happen without incidents?
The Mexican government has allowed us to cross. When we come to the border, when we cross from McAllen into Reynosa, and then we travel to Tampico so that the aid we're carrying gets loaded onto a cargo ship. The Mexicans have always cooperated with that. They understand. They have good diplomatic relations with Cuba, and they have not been opposed to what we do. Of course, the situation in Mexico is very delicate right now with all of the violence, and we've been talking with the Mexican government about making sure that the caravan can cross in safety. But the Mexicans have been very supportive.
I have a question about healthcare and the U.S. students studying in the Latin American School of Medicine. What is the issue with this that you're going to be discussing this Sunday?
Well, just presenting the realities of Cuban healthcare and talking about the program opens a lot of people's eyes, and sometimes people get tears in their eyes when they hear about what's being accomplished in Cuba. One of the things that's really interesting about Cuba and interesting in the U.S. context now, because the issue of healthcare is so controversial, is that the Cubans have set up a program of universal healthcare, which is accessible to everybody, which is absolutely free of charge. And they do it even though they have very little in the way of economic resources, but they organize the system in such a way that everybody has access to healthcare, that if you're feeling ill, the doctor comes to you before you need to go to the doctor, even if you're not ill. They focus on prevention, they focus on promotion of health, they do a lot of community education, and they're responsible really for keeping everybody well. They always say that healthcare is not a commodity, it's not merchandise. Healthcare is a human right. It's not a business. And we've been very impressed with what we've seen about how their system is structured. And we think that given all the problems we have with healthcare delivery in our country, we could learn a lot just from observing that system. The Cubans also have a long tradition of internationalism in healthcare. When there's a crisis or a natural disaster, they send doctors to other countries to work. And after Hurricane Mitch and Hurricane George happened in 1998, they responded to those disasters in Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican Republic, and Haiti by saying it wasn't enough just to send a short-term solution. They were going to open a medical school because they said that if they could train young people from the countries that were affected to be doctors, then they could help create a healthcare infrastructure in those poor countries that would save as many lives every year as had just been lost in the hurricane. So they opened a school called the Latin American School of Medicine, starting out with young people from Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican Republic, and Haiti. And now they have students from more than 90 countries studying in the program. But the thing that's relevant here is that they have right now about 115 students from the United States who are on campus. They're students who come from communities of color, from poor communities. They are in the same scholarship program as the others, with the understanding that their education is completely free of charge, and that when they graduate, they will return to their home country, to the United States, and give medical service work as doctors in poor communities in the United States. The program's been very successful. We already have 47 graduates. 10 of them are in residency already, and the program's working really well.
Well, this sounds very interesting. I know that you are in Mexico City. It must be so early right now over there. But this talk will be this Sunday, June 5 at 6 p.m. There's going to be a potluck supper at 5 p.m. This will be at the New Paltz Village Hall in 25 Plattekill Avenue in New Paltz. And the cost is free, which is a good thing.
The events that this organization, the project for the Caribbean, Latin America, Usually it starts with a potluck. Mm-hmm. People come and eat about five and hang out and talk and meet person to person with the speaker and whoever is there. So it's a very nice way to start a meeting where there's such a good information going to be transferred.
Ellen, will the conversation be in English or in Spanish?
I've been told it will be in English, but I bet we could do part of it in Spanish if we need to.
Oh, excellent.
Wonderful.
Excellent. Best of luck and have a good rest.
Thank you very much, Ellen. And
thank you. I'm really looking forward to being with the Focus class, and I hope people will come out for the talk. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Okay.
Thank you. And now I guess it's time to have a cafe and a conchita in Mexico City.
Con mucho placer.
Okay. Goodbye. Adios.
Bye.
Ciao.
That was Ellen Burstein, acting co-director of the IFCO, Pastor for Peace. And she's going to be talking this Sunday about Cuba, the proposed economic changes, the effects of the blockade, the healthcare, and the U.S. students studying in the Latin American School of Medicine.
And that's in New Paltz this Sunday.
This Sunday at 6 p.m.